And now our regular guest Joan Lewis is here to take a look at highlights of papal and other Vatican activities over the past week.
Obviously, February 2nd is the Feast of the Presentation, is always a big day for those in the religious and consecrated life, their liturgy and celebration with the Holy Father in the evening. And another very important event occurs on February 2nd in Rome, and they take down the Christmas tree.
And all the decorations that have been looking so beautiful in St. Peter's Square
exactly.
for the past couple of months.
So the nativity scene, which people worked on to create over about a six-week period, stays up for a lengthy time, and it's the Vatican tradition that that all comes down on the Feast of the Presentation. So I live by their calendar, and that's when my Christmas decorations come down.
Looking at the Pope's agenda over this past week, if we go back to the Angelus on Sunday, it was
a fun one.
It got a lot of news coverage, didn't it? Largely because of the doves that were refusing, really, to do what the Pope wanted them to do.
Exactly. This is the last Sunday of January event. Occurs every year, and we have children of Catholic Action from Rome who the Catholic Action marks January as a month of peace. And they sponsor a peace caravan through the streets of Rome. It ends up, of course, in St. Peter's Square at the for the Angelus. And traditionally, two young kids are chosen, about 10 or so years old. They're at the window with the Holy Father. One reads a message, and then they both try to help the Pope release doves. And I think Sunday was kind of one of the first days where we saw the cold beginning to come in, and the doves did seem to prefer the warmth of the Apostolic Palace, you know. Or one just kind of sat on the windowsill, well, what'll I do? And the other one went right back in the building and came back out. So
reminiscent of similar scenes with Pope John Paul in his
later years. Yes, exactly. And so everybody, you know, kind of gets a big kick out of that. And the many, many people in St. Peter's Square can always watch this on the big screens that are in the square, too. So if you can't see the Pope at his window that closely, you will on the screen. But that was also, by the way, Sunday was the day of in which leprosy is featured, the day for those who have Hansen's disease or leprosy. And the Pope did mention that in the Angelus remarks, but he dedicated most of his remarks to the gospel where St. Mark relates Jesus' teaching in the synagogue of Capernaum. And I was there. That's wonderful, isn't it? When you go to the Holy Land and you go to these places, and it's wonderful. Jesus healed a man with an unclean spirit who recognized him as the Messiah. And the gospel explains that, and the Pope explained that, Jesus' fame, of course, began to spread in the region, and he united effectiveness of the word with signs of deliverance from evil. And then the Pope talked about divine authority, which Jesus had, of course. And he said, for man, authority often means possession, power, dominion, success. But for God, authority means service, humility, and love. And that's exactly what we saw in Jesus' action. We see it later on when he leans down to wash the feet of his disciples. And Jesus did nothing but seek man's good, not his own. So a pretty powerful mini homily on the part of the Pope.
The other teaching moment, of course, this week was once again at the Wednesday General Audience. And on that occasion, he continued, didn't he, what has become quite a significant series of teachings on prayer, and on particular on Jesus' own prayers.
On Jesus' own prayer. And it's funny, I think a lot of us, when he began this catechesis, went, oh, you don't think of Jesus praying. You think of him preaching and so forth. You don't think of Jesus praying. But the Pope Wednesday dedicated that catechesis to Jesus' prayer at Gethsemane, where, of course, we see that only when man conforms his will to God's will, as Jesus did in the garden, can he attain the true heights of his being. Only when he emerges from himself in his, man's yes to God, can man's desire to be completely free be fulfilled. And of course, Jesus says to the Father, you know, he asks for the Father's, begs for the Father's help, and then he says, but actually, thy will be done. And the Pope also referred to the Our Father, in that prayer. He said, you know, here we are, we pray that daily, and we pray that the Lord's will, again, turning ourselves over to God, may His will be done. And we pray that every single time we say the Our Father. Sometimes prayers are so rote, however, that we really don't think of the words.
And therefore it's very good to revisit them and to
look again
at what they mean and where they reflect.
And just hear the Pope take something apart, line for line. And all we have to do, my own little personal discovery, I mean, say something more slowly. And the words will have the impact, not that race through, because we race through everything in life, including prayer. And when you do say it more slowly, it'll have its impact. So,
looking at some of the other events that took place in the Vatican, the itinerary was released, the official itinerary for Pope Benedict's visit to Mexico and Cuba at the end of March.
Then March 23rd to 29th. And it's interesting, the first hint of this coming out actually came from the bishops in those countries. And they had the last day is the 28th. And so now the Vatican comes out, and it looks like they've added a day. They really haven't. But the 28th is a fairly full day, his last day in that part of the world. And he leaves at 5 o'clock, returning to Rome on the 29th, because, of course, it's an overnight flight. So the trip was, all the details were from, you know, when his plane lands in, because he visits Mexico first, and the shrines he's going to visit, the people he's going to meet with, and then the Holy Father's time in Cuba. He's there, arrives March 26th in Cuba, and he doesn't leave until the 28th at 5 at night, so he has a number of events there. The mid part of each day is pretty free of events, formal meetings with presidents and so forth. So you'll have the morning and then a period where he can meet with people and have lunch and rest and so forth, and then later afternoon we'll have other events. So they've spread the events out over a decent period of time, because none of us should ever forget that the Pope is 84. And will be on the verge of turning 85 when he is on this trip.
Also during the week, we had some announcements, didn't we? Particularly the new Patriarch of Venice. And this is particularly interesting given the importance of the role of Patriarch of Venice within the Italian Church, but almost also within the Universal Church.
Yes, and the Pope named the Bishop of La Spezia, Francesco Moraglia, as the new Archbishop of Venice. And the whole thing is very interesting because Patriarch designate, because that is what they the title they do have in Venice. He's only 58. He's only been a bishop 4 years. I think it's February 3rd that he was consecrated in 2008. So here we are, 2012. And now he succeeds Cardinal Angelo Scola, who, of course, was there for many years, and the Pope, in a kind of a somewhat unexpected move, moved Scola to Milan, because a lot of people just expected Scola to stay in Venice and then have a new person in Milan. And the interesting thing is, of course, Bishop Moraglia will undoubtedly, in a future consistory, not the one this February, will receive a cardinal's red hat. And you alluded to something, you know, it is, he's a patriarch, he's a person, whoever heads Venice, to watch, because in the last century, Venice has given the Catholic Church three popes. So we had Pope St. Pius X, Blessed John the 23rd, and Pope John Paul I, of course, you know, Papa Luciani.
All were patriarchs of Venice before being elected to the St. Peter.
Yes, exactly. And so three popes from Venice, hey, not a bad record for that city on the lagoon, as it is known here in Italy. But it'll be interesting to watch this bishop. Oh, I posted pictures on my blog. You would not believe the resemblance between this man and Pope John Paul I.
I noticed that myself, actually. It's quite striking, isn't it?
Absolutely. I went right on and found pictures of, I had one of him, Moraglia. But anyway, it's an amazing resemblance. And they say he's a consensus builder. That is so important. I don't care where you work. If you're in a position of leadership, you know, church or politics, whatever, to be a consensus builder is an awesomely wonderful thing. And he's also, I didn't know this, he's from Genoa, Bishop Moraglia originally. He's the first Genovese to ascend to the See of St. Mark, as Venice is also known. That's their patron saint. So definitely a man to watch
absolutely.
When he becomes a cardinal and can enter into conclave.
Just time to take a quick look at the ongoing American bishops' visits here
right.
to Rome.
They began their ad limina visit, which is supposed to be every 5 years, but because of John Paul's illness and death and so forth, a lot of things got kind of moved back a bit. And they began their visits in the late fall, November, December. And we've had bishops from Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama last week, and bishops from Michigan and the Midwest part of the country are in Rome as we speak. And it's interesting because I've talked to so many of them, and three themes really have emerged from the visit. Their input to the Holy Father and to the offices that they visit, and then their input and question from the Pope and these offices. And those themes are immigration, religious freedom, which you and I could do an entire another show on, and evangelization. So those are the areas that in which the church is going to be very preeminent, in America.
And elsewhere, of course, with the Synod on New Evangelization
sure,
coming up
exactly.
in the autumn, so very much on message for
exactly.
the Vatican as well. And, of course, finally, we heard rather sadly the death of one of the former American church leaders, Cardinal Bevilacqua from
right.
Philadelphia.
88 years old, and he had run, Philadelphia is 1.5 million people, and he had run that archdiocese as archbishop for 15 years, has an amazing record. He was a canon and a civil lawyer. He didn't actually ever kind of take a case to court and defend it, but in any event, it was the second Philadelphia cardinal from Philadelphia, of course, to die, and John Cardinal Foley oh, yeah. died in December, and so here we have, almost 2 months later, Cardinal Bevilacqua.
So the people will be sorely missing him, as you
yeah.
rightly said, after the death of Cardinal Foley as well.
So exactly, right.
Our thoughts go with them at the end of this show. For the moment, Joan, thank you for being with us, and speak to you again at the same time next week.
Okay.
And Joan Lewis will be back on the air again at this same time next week.